going to be doing more teaching tonight, maybe than preaching. And my teacher's coming out in me, I guess. Yeah, but I was touched by this, and I wanted to share this with you. And I'm going to be in the book of Jeremiah, Jeremiah chapter number 35, if you want to be turning there. And Jeremiah, the book of Jeremiah has always been a hard book to read and understand. And I know whenever I read the text this evening, you'll probably real quickly draw a couple of two or three conclusions from the text, but I want you to keep your minds open. Sometimes not everything is as it appears. And Jeremiah is a book that is when it was written, transcribed, transliterated, from the scrolls. Jeremiah is a book that is not written in chronological order. That's one of the reasons it's so hard to understand. The passage I'm going to read tonight is you have to go back about 15 years prior to this in order to get it into the setting in the book of Jeremiah where it belongs. Jeremiah prophesied a period of about 40 years. And he prophesied under five different kings that he prophesied while those kings was reigning. And if you look at it, he's prophesying here. The king Jehoiakim was king at that time. Jehoiakim was the third out of the five kings that Jeremiah prophesied under. He is right in the middle of Jeremiah's prophecy. And if we was to gauge Jeremiah's success by today's church standards, we would probably consider him a failure. He is known as the weeping prophet. We know that he preached, he prophesied, and it seems like that nobody cared. In 40 years, I don't ever recall reading to where Jeremiah ever had one convert. He never had anybody that converted to, I mean, today's standards would be a disaster. To think that I had ministered for 40 years and never affected or touched anybody's life. But Jeremiah just kept going. The northern kingdom had already fallen. The 10 tribes have vanished and been placed in the hands of the Assyrians at this time. That at the time of this prophecy here, that just leaves Judah and Benjamin. And Judah and Benjamin, those tribes are on the verge of going under. But he's prophesying to them. And I'm going to begin reading at verse number 1. Jeremiah chapter 35 and verse number 1. It said, "The word which came unto Jeremiah from the Lord in the days of Jehoiakim the son of Josiah, king of Judah, saying, Go unto thee the house of the Rechabites, and speak unto them, and bring them into the house of the Lord, into one of the chambers, and give them wine to drink. Then I took Jezaniah, the son of Jeremiah, the son of Habazaniah, and his brethren, and all his sons, and the whole house of the Rechabites." There's that word again. "And I brought them into the house of the Lord, into the chamber of the sons of Hanan, the son of Igdaliah, a man of God, which was by the chamber of the princess, which was above the chamber of Manasseh, and the son of Shalom, the keeper of the door. And I set before the sons of the house of the Rebekites pots full of wine and the cups. And I said unto them, Drink ye wine. But they said, We will drink no wine. For Jonadab, the son of Rechab, our father, commanded us, saying, Ye shall drink no wine, neither ye, nor your sons forever. Neither shall you build a house, nor sow seed, nor plant a vineyard, nor have any, but all your days ye shall dwell in tents, that ye may live many days in the land wherein ye be strangers. Thus have we obeyed the voice of Jonadab, the son of Rechab, our father, in all that he hath charged us to do, to drink no wine at all our days, we, our wives, our sons, nor our daughters, nor to build houses for us to dwell in, and neither have we vineyard, nor field, nor seed. But we have dwelt in tents, and have obeyed and done according to all that Jonadab our father commanded us. Now, you may have been like I have read over this passage, and I've just read over it, and not really thought about what it was saying. This is one of those passages that I have done this. And I got to looking, well, who are the Rechabites? Why was it that they could not drink wine? Why was it they couldn't build a house? Why was it that they could not plant seeds or even plant a vineyard? Does that seem kind of odd to anybody besides me? All the days of their life. Well, I thought, well, I'll just do some digging. You know what I found? Chapter 35, four times, is the only place they're mentioned in the Bible. The Rechabites. Well, I got to looking at this, and at first glance, I got to thinking, well, it seems like God is just testing them. But this wasn't a test for the Rechabites. Jeremiah brought him into the house of the Lord. The Lord told him to bring him into the house, set wine before him, and tell him to drink. This wasn't a test of how strong they was. This was a test to the rest of the world of how loyal they was. I have to go back and look. The Rechabites who was they? Well, first off, they was Gentiles. They're in the land, but they're Gentiles. We go back and look at the history. We know them by another name, probably. 1 Chronicles chapter 2 and verse 55, it says, these are the Kenites that come out of Hamath, the father of the house of Rechab. Well, you may know them by the other name of the Kenites. Well, who are the Kenites? Well, if you remember in Judges chapter 1 and verse 16, it said, and the children of Kenite, Moses' father-in-law, went up out of the city of palm trees with the children of Judah into the wilderness of Judah, which lieth in the south of Arad, and they went and dwelt among the people. Moses' father-in-law was a Kenite. They married into the Israelites. They were Kenites. Goes all the way back to Moses' father-in-law. They did not come out of Egypt. They was already out of Egypt. But they dwelt with the Israelites. They wasn't an Israelite, but they went into the land together, into the promised land, and settled in the land together. They were nomads. They wandered from here into there. They lived in tents. But not only that, they wasn't God's chosen people, but they looked out for God's people. Do you remember the story of Heber and Jael? They were Kenites. You'll read the story in Judges chapter 4, verses 21 and 22. You remember Jael, Caesarea had come in and was looking for a place to rest. And Jael said, "Oh, come on into the house here. We've got a wonderful place. We've got a wonderful bed here. Just go ahead and come in and rest all you want to." And while he was taking a nap, she took a nail, a tent stake, and drove it through the temple of his forehead and killed him graveyard dead. She was looking out for the interest of the Israelites. It stopped a terrible thing. They was killing the Israelites, massacring the Israelites. He was a commander under I believe it was Jabel, the king of the Canaanites. It stopped that war. And they come out victorious. Not only did they look out for God's people, but you'll read that God's people looked out for the Canaanite for the Canaanites. You remember when the Israel started to attack the Amalekites, they sent a message unto the Kenites and said to them, "You need to get out. You need to separate." They lived in the same land. They gave them a warning. 1 Samuel chapter 15 and verse 6. And Saul said unto the Kenites, "Go and depart and get you down from among the Amalekites, lest I destroy you with them. For you shewed kindness to all the children of Israel when they came up out of Egypt." So the Kenites departed from among the Amalekites. You'll read back at a few verses prior to that, that Saul was coming out with 100,000 footmen. I mean, a massive army that he was coming out. They was ordered to kill men, women, and children, not leave anybody left alive. They sent word ahead to the Kenites and said, "Go ahead and separate yourself and get out of the country. There's going to be a mass slaughter getting ready to take place." The Israelites looked after the Kenites, and the Kenites looked after the Israelites. You remember Jehu, God's executioner. He was the one that was to deal with the family of Ahab and Jezebel. He had great zeal, but he wanted someone with zeal to match his zeal. 2 Kings chapter number 10, you'll find out that he chose Jonadab to help him destroy the worshipers of Baal. They had a great strategy, a great plan that they ended up tricking the worshipers of Baal and ended up destroying them. I'll tell you what, God always has a plan to destroy the enemy. If you're here tonight, you're part of a great heritage. The wife and I, we was going through some paperwork this past week. And I'll tell you what, just the founding of this church, there were some battles that was fought. There were some, they tried to close the church down. There were some problems that took place. But just to be a part of this church is amazing. To be able to come here this tonight and to worship like what we've worshiped. We've got a great heritage here right on the highway. There have been miracles that have taken place here. There have been people that have been saved and baptized and healed. And there's been victories fought and won right here at the House of Prayer Church. I thought I wanted to look tonight at the Rechabites. First thing I want you to notice is their loyalty. Jonadab told them, the father. He said, you're not going to drink any wine. You're not going to sow any seeds. You're not going to plant any vineyards. And you're going to dwell in tents the rest of your life. Brother Blake, that would have been, that's fine. But this wasn't a week later. This wasn't a year later. Jonadab had been dead between 250 to 300 years when Jeremiah set the wine before him and told him to drink. They didn't even have a picture of their father, of Jonadab. They didn't have a picture of him. They didn't even know what he looked like. They didn't have his sword or maybe some of his prized possessions to look at and say, well, this is my father or my great grandfather Jonadab. They had none of that. All that they had was a commandment from Jonadab that you'll not drink any wine. You'll not plant any seed. You'll not plant any vineyards. And you'll live in tents. It may seem strange when he's been dead 250 to 300 years. But I got one better for you than that. I've got a God that sent His Son over 2,000 years ago, and I'm still doing what He says. I'm talking about loyalty. There's nothing wrong with planting a vineyard. There's nothing wrong with sowing seed. There's nothing wrong with building a house. Why not? Because my father said. There's a lot of places you could have been on a Wednesday night. But I'm glad to see you're in church. Why do I go to church on Wednesday night? Why do I go to church when the doors are open? Because my father said. This wasn't to test their faith. It was to show the world their faith. There's a reason why this passage is in Jeremiah chapter 35. It is not to prove to the Rechabites of who they was. It was to prove to the world of who they was. I see the posterity, the future generations. It will not only affect you, but it'll affect everyone that follows you in the future. Look in verse number 18, if you will. And Jeremiah said unto the house of the Rechabites, thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, because ye have obeyed the commandment of Jonadab your father, and kept all of his precepts, and done according to all that he hath commanded you. Therefore thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, Jonadab the son of Rechab shall not want a man to stand before me forever. Your loyalty makes a difference. I may not have always been perfect, Brother Isaac. But I think one thing that they can say about me is I've always been faithful. I've always been. You may not be able to sing. You may not be able to preach. You may not be able to teach a Sunday school class. But one thing you can do is be loyal. God will reward that. He said to the Rechabites, he said, you'll never have a day where a Rechabite won't be able to stand before me. What's that saying? That there'll be a remnant that will last forever. We are seeing a church world to where church is not important to the church members. And if it's not important to the parents, the children will care less. I felt that. Is there anything wrong with building a house? I had to ask myself this question. Why could they not build a house? Number one, they didn't own the land. It wasn't theirs. They was inhabitants of a strange country. There's nothing wrong with building a house, but this world is not my home. He's got a land that's prepared. He's got a mansion prepared for me. He's got a land, a mansion prepared for you. If you're a child of the King, this world's not my home. This church is a wonderful church, but this is not my church where I'm looking for a place where I can worship 24/7 where the sun is the light. There'll be no need for electricity there, for there'll never be a night. I'm just a stranger and a pilgrim. We may not have a lot here. We may not be able to put down a lot of roots here. That's what he was saying, is don't put down any roots. Don't drive any stakes too deep. I'm not asking you to build mansions. I'm asking you to be loyal. Why do you do what you do? Because that's what the Father told me. I don't go and try to find messages in the Bible to justify what, so I can do what I want to do. Why do I do it? Because the Father told me. You know, I find it interesting that the Rechabites had a similar vow as the Nazarites. But it was different yet than the Israelites. You know why I don't preach to you that it's wrong for you to play cards and to roll dice? Because that's something God dealt with me about. He told me it was wrong. If God deals with you with something, and he tells you don't do it, you better stay away from it. And stay loyal and stay faithful. If he told me that it was wrong for me to have hair on my head, I'd shave it off tonight. My wife's rolling her eyes. I've been looking for an excuse. But you know, he hadn't told me that yet. Now, he might, but he hasn't told me. But if we could learn a lesson from this, it's whatever we do, if we do it for him, for our Father, and stay faithful and stay loyal. It doesn't have to make sense to the rest of the world. It has to make sense to us and to our Father. That's who we're here to please. I've done my best tonight. Does anybody need prayer tonight before we dismiss? All right, let's gather around for a season of prayer, if you will. Let's have a season of prayer this evening. I've done my best.